Does someone have their Bible? Can you read Philippians chapter 4, verses 10 through 13?
I got it.
Thanks, Carol.
Okay, here we go. I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now at length you have revived your concern for me. You were indeed concerned for me, but you had no opportunity. Not that I complain of want, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. In any and all circumstances, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and want. I can do all things in him who strengthens me.
Thank you.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
What version are you reading from, Carol?
Oh, it's probably Revised Standard. Let me look. Yeah, Revised Standard version.
Yep. All right. So we have this little contentment passage. You've probably heard this Bible passage said often. I can do all things through him who gives me strength. Very famous passage, 4:13. I'll go ahead and read here. We gain here a window on Paul as a very human Christian facing difficulties and troubles and having to learn the hard way to cope with them. No instant or easy solutions for Paul. No casual leave it all to God approach, ignoring the real problems of Christian living and ministry. No, the steady schoolwork God had set to Paul of finding out the secret of having plenty or having nothing. And this is the secret, as with everything else for Paul. The God who he knew in Jesus enabled him to face everything with a strength that came from, this is going to be a key word, outside. Outside in Jesus, we should say. So now I want to pause here. Can you think of the times where Paul had plenty? Or why would he say that Paul had plenty? There were times that he just everything went his way. If you go back one chapter, it says this about Paul. We studied this earlier. It says this: he was circumcised on the eighth day of the people of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews, as do the law, a Pharisee, as to zeal, a persecutor of the church, as to righteousness under the law, blameless. So Paul had everything, plenty. He also experienced the worst of times too. And if you want to get a list of how bad his life was or how difficult it was, you get a picture of that in 2 Corinthians 11:23 through 29. I just want to read this again. Maybe this is a reminder, or maybe you haven't heard this before, but listen to what happened to Paul. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, 23 through 29. This is how bad life was for Paul. I am a better one. I am talking like a madman with far greater labors, far more imprisonments with countless beatings, often near death. 5 times I received at the hands of the Jews the 40 lashes less one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I was adrift at sea, on frequent journeys, in danger from rivers, danger from robbers, danger from my own people, danger from Gentiles, danger in the city, danger in the wilderness, danger at sea, danger from false brothers, in toil and hardship through many a sleepless night, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. And apart from other things, there is the daily pressure on me of my anxiety for all the churches. Wow. Okay. That's straight from Paul. This guy had it rough. So it's interesting when he says, I've had everything, I've had little. He really meant that. This is a guy that kind of life was a roller coaster for him from life, from the situations that he lived in. So I just want to share, this isn't someone who is sitting in an ivory tower kind of writing and, you know, giving wise words. This is someone who really, I mean, wow, wild ride here. All right. When Paul uses this word contentment, I really want to dig in here. When Paul uses this word contentment, he's lifting a word that was very commonly used by the Greeks. It's called autarkia. Another way to translate that word would be self-sufficiency. This word had been studied by the Greeks and uplifted for about 400 years before Paul ever wrote this letter. And I want you to understand, the Greeks had a very, very different understanding of this word, and specifically the Stoics. Does anyone, when you hear the word Stoic, what do you think of? Any thoughts on that? Okay.
Expressionless. Yeah. Strong.
I kind of agree with that, expressionless too.
What's that?
Somebody that's not bothered by anything.
Okay. Oh, man, that's awesome. Okay. Bill, that's really good. When you hear that word oftentimes used, not bothered by anything, really, really well put. The Stoics, and here's why they're not bothered by anything. These were their three prime teachings in Stoicism. This is how they achieved contentment. This is their secret sauce for contentment. Number one, eliminate all desire. Get to a point in which you need nothing. So Socrates says, this is like the 4th century before Jesus, 5th century maybe. He who is content with least is nature's wealth. So the key here is tell your children not to ask anything from Santa for Christmas. How does that work? Does that work well?
With that.
So the first step is to eliminate all desire. Second step for a Stoic was to eliminate all emotions, okay? Get to a point in which you don't care what happens to yourself or to anyone else. And they actually taught this. They would say, pick up your cup and say you don't care about it. That way, when it breaks, no big deal. And they would say, take even bigger items. Take your sister and say you don't care about her. They would literally do this. So that if she ever got sick or died, you wouldn't be affected emotionally. See how that works? And then how does one do this third? See everything as God's will. See, the Stoics believed in the gods. They were religious people. They weren't just, you know, bad people. They believed in the gods, but however painful something was, they would just say, oh, it was God's will. So it was useless to struggle against it. So they had no desire. They had no emotions, and if anything bad happened, they just say, oh, it was God's will. And that's how they were able to just kind of maintain this careless, carefree kind of life. I want to pause for a moment. Anything strike you there? Were any of you raised in a Stoic household?
Yes.
What do you think about that? Eliminating all desires, eliminating all emotions. Do you think that's a healthy approach?
Well, you know what comes to mind? It seems like between male and female, males are supposed to be stoic. Supposed to be. I'm not saying they should.
Sorry, Oscar.
Did I say something wrong?
Oh, no, I goofed up. Sorry. Go ahead and do that. Say it again.
Well, it seems like society is kind of told us that men should be stoic, no emotions. So if you cry at somebody's funeral, you're weak or whatever it might be. At least I've heard those comments. I'm not saying that's right. The fact is that the society kind of looked at a male being stoic, female not. That's a generalization.
Oscar, thank you for that. Oh, man. That's really good. I believe the Stoic philosophy has crept into our society very, very much so. And so you're not supposed to cry. You're not supposed to show emotion, especially, you know, you're talking about males. Does anyone else see how this has kind of influenced the way people live? No emotions, no desires. We want to know how this works. Is it okay for Christians to show emotions?
Sure.
Absolutely. Christianity is very much against this teaching. So Paul was all over the map. This guy was, if you read the book of Galatians, he's angry. If you read Philippians, he's joyful. He has emotions all over the place. He's not a robot. And so I think one takeaway from, you know, as you take a look at what's happening here, is Christians, there's nothing wrong with showing emotion, with crying and connecting and sharing, you know, sharing depressive thoughts. A Stoic would say that's the worst thing possible. Paul's saying showing emotions has nothing to do with contentment. He's really striking at a major, major world philosophy here.